This is Sid Roth saying, I have a vision. Now is the set time to blow the trumpet in Zion.
Blow a trumpet in Zion, sound it on the mountain. Blow a trumpet in Zion, for the day of the Lord is come.
Shalom, Mishpucha. Shalom, family. Mishpucha is a Hebrew word and means family. And we're the Mishpucha, the family with a Jewish heart, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people that are one new man, Messiah Yeshua, Messiah Jesus, getting ready, Mishpucha, to blow the grandest shofar, the grandest trumpet in Zion. We want everyone, everywhere, to hear the good news. We want everyone, everywhere, to be red hot for the Messiah. You know, I was listening on the radio one day. I'm driving home from the ministry, and I was listening to Sean Hannity. And Sean had a guy on, an author. I'd never heard of him before. His name was Joel Rosenberg. And Joel says, I'm an evangelical Christian, and my father comes from an Orthodox Jewish background. And I thought, I'm going to really listen to this interview. Then Sean was saying things like, this fellow is prophetic. He was talking about a terrorist attack before it occurred. He had a best-selling book out called The Last Jihad, and he had all this prophetic stuff, and Sean was raving about this guy. So I figured I'd get him on the phone, and let's find out about Joel Rosenberg, who wrote the book The Last Jihad, and his latest book is titled The Last Days. Joel, so I can get to know you just a little bit, tell me about your father's background.
Sure. Well, Sid, thank you so much for having me on the air. I'm glad you caught that interview and picked up that there was a story behind the story. I appreciate that very much. My dad was raised Orthodox Jewish in Brooklyn. He comes from a family. His parents were children. It was really his grandparents that escaped from Russia in the first few years of the 1900s. They lived in Minsk at a time when the Tsar was wiping out town after town of Jews.
Interesting. My heritage is from Minsk, too, but go ahead.
Wow. Well, what years did your family come over?
Well, my grandfather came over in 1938, something like that.
Okay. Well, this was around 1905, 1906. Again, by God's grace, they got out. By God's grace, they didn't settle in Poland or Austria or Germany. They were able to make it across the continent, got a boat to Ellis Island, and like any good Jewish family, they set up shop in Brooklyn. And that's where my dad grew up, in the Bedford-Stuyvesant area of Brooklyn. He was a bit of a rebel, and so at 18, he decided to set off for California, the promised land, as he to become an architect. And I think he went about as far away from his family as he could for a number of different reasons. But I would say during that time he had really become an agnostic. I don't think the Orthodox Judaism that his family practiced, quite honestly, was much more pharisaical and religious, do's and don'ts, than it was spiritual. And it disillusioned him. And he eventually got a job as an architect in Syracuse, New York, where my mother, an agnostic Methodist, was doing graduate work at Syracuse University. They met and got married, and they were really what I would call, maybe in this era, they were seekers. And they read the Bhagavad Gita, the Quran, they read the Bible together. They visited churches, and they were constantly talking about, you know, there must be a God. They were, you know, this was the 60s. They were a little bit older and, of course, married, so they weren't really like hippies or anything. But they were definitely – they were lost, but they were searching. And in 1973, they happened to visit a church where somebody really carefully and clearly communicated that Jesus is the Messiah. And it clearly communicated the way to salvation. My mom heard that and just instantly knew that's what we've been looking for. And there was an altar call, and she went forward, just assuming my dad was a couple steps behind her, and he wasn't.
It's a real strong thing because we Jews, if we don't know anything about Judaism, the one thing we know is what a Jew doesn't do. A Jew doesn't believe in Jesus. And most Gentiles don't understand what a hard decision that is, even for a Jewish person that's turned off on religion.
That's right. Well, that's right. And it was very, his mother, my dad's mother, when she was walking down the street, if there was a church, she would cross the street and walk on the other side. And this, I mean, she was deeply against Christianity.
You know, my grandfather shared the story with my father shared the story about my grandfather on the other side of family. My mother's side was Minsk. My father's side was Poland. And my grandfather would walk by a church and spit at the church every time he would walk by, because he attributed the worst things that have happened to Jewish people was due to Christianity.
It's a hard legacy. And some of the mistakes, some of the serious mistakes of people in the name of Christianity, and some, of course, really twisting Christianity purposely to do evil. Either way, yeah, this is where my dad was. I mean, he was, you know, he was a searcher, but he wasn't. He couldn't quite believe that this was it.
I'm going to take you, Joel, to January of 1984. Here you are, a young man, struggling with your own faith. What do you believe? What don't you believe? As a matter of fact, you weren't experiencing much joy being part of religious Christianity. And one evening in 1984, you were actually upset with God?
That's right. Well, because my parents, my dad did 6 months later come to receive Christ and Jesus as the Messiah. So they started taking us to church, and I kind of began then growing up in a church background. But it wasn't connecting with me in my heart. And I was getting to the point as a junior in high school that I was not experiencing – basically I was mad at God because I said, God, you promise in your Bible love and joy and hope and happiness, peace. I'm not experiencing any of it. So either I don't get it or it's not true. And this was, you know – I mean, this is probably common adolescence, but it was also, I think God was almost really forcing me, but he was requiring me to wrestle with him. And of course, I learned later that, you know, Israel means he who wrestles with God, right? So I was wrestling with him. And what was fascinating was I was getting angry and I was slipping into a depression week after week over the course of that school year. But one night, I had just gone through my little litany, you know, God, you're not doing anything for me. You know, what have you done for me lately? That type of thing. And God stopped me dead in my tracks. And in my heart, it was as though he was speaking in an audible voice, although I don't believe it was. But in my heart, it was clear. And he said, Joel, do you ever spend time reading my word? Now, there was a technical answer I could have given, which is, yes, I had read the Bible. But I knew what he was asking. And the answer was no. And I said, no, Lord, I'm not doing that. And he said, Joel, do you ever spend time talking to me in prayer? And again, I had to say, honestly, no, I'm not doing that on a regular basis or in a serious way. And he said, then why would you expect to experience my blessings if you don't know me? End of the conversation. It was like the frequency turned off, but I knew at that moment God had been so merciful to me. It just changed everything in that moment to hear God ask me a rhetorical question, but one that helped me understand that he was listening to me and that he had an answer for me.
There is nothing more exciting when anyone comes to that personal realization that God is real and personal and interested in me as an individual. I have heard God's voice several times in my life. I wish it would be every day. But I have heard God's voice. And I have to tell you, Joel, there is nothing to compare to it. I wouldn't take $1 billion for being able to hear God's voice and get instruction.
It was a powerful moment for me. And it developed a voraciousness in me for the Word of God and prayer. I mean, I just dove into the Scriptures, and between that January of my junior year and And the fall that I went into my senior year, I went to the Olympics to share the gospel with some friends in Los Angeles in the summer of 84. I started a Bible study and evangelism group in my high school, and that was really a controversial move. And but we shared our faith with just about every person in that high school, 1,500 people, and God just did something unbelievable. And people could see, even though I'd been brought up in the church now at this point in my life, and even though I had a name, Joel Rosenberg, everyone was always a little confused by that. but they could see that I had been kind of, you know, just a little down, a little morose as a junior. And I was just on fire for God by my senior year. And people noticed that, and they asked questions, and God gave me answers. And I just, oh, man, it was exhilarating, and just abiding with God and His Word, it just was extraordinary.
Now, I have to ask you a question. I know one day you ask God to help you write a book, etc., but in your wildest imagination, did you think that you would write a book that would be number one on Amazon.com, that for 11 weeks it would be on the New York Times bestseller list, that that you would be interviewed by Rush Limbaugh, by Sean Hannity.
By you. My wife and I, when we first moved to Washington, we used to listen to your show, as it just happened to be on at the exact moment we'd drive to work, and we would listen to those trumpets, and that's where we learned the word mishpachah. I don't think I'd ever really the Hebrew school. So, yeah, I mean, no, I never imagined.
What's the purpose of your books? Why are you really and truly, underline, why are you writing your books? These are bestsellers. Who's who? I mean, the top people in America are talking about this book, but why did you write it?
To share the gospel. I mean, I had always wanted to write novels and screenplays since I was a kid, but when God finally gave me the time and said, this is time to write, he'd refined my heart to the point where I didn't want to do it to be successful in some worldly sense. I wanted to write a story that drew people in on an adventure.
Let me tell you, it not only draws people in, I have to give people a warning. I mean, I got so excited when I was reading it, I had to put it down a little bit to calm down. Let me read what Sean Hannity has to say about your first book, The Last Jihad. Buckle up. The Last Jihad is a high-speed, heart-pounding, edge-of-the-seat roller coaster ride into the heart of darkness. Feels ripped from tomorrow's headlines. This stuff could really, I can picture Sean saying this, this stuff could really happen. I mean, I can see how God is using this book because it's one of the top secular books in America. But I have to tell you, as good as your first book was, you outdid yourself in your next book, The Last Days. That's the one we're making available for a donation of $30 or more. It's a hardback book that includes postage. I want to make this available to you. People that you thought would never want to read something about the gospel will read this book. They will not put it down. You won't put it down. Call or write today for The Last Days, donation of $30 or more. If you would like to receive a complimentary copy of our bi-monthly teaching newsletter, materials catalog, or information about becoming Mishpacha or Chalitza, write to me, Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521, or call our order-only line, 1-800-548-1918. To place a credit card order, call anytime, 1-800-548-1918. For all other calls, the number is 912-265-2500. That's 912-265-2500. For a cassette tape of this week's broadcast, send a donation of $10 or more to Sid Roth, that's SIDROTH, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. To see our television show, It's Supernatural, and to listen to past radio programs, look us up on the web at www.sidroth.org. That's www.sidroth.org.
prophet in Zion.